Welcome to Be With an Engineer. Thank you for joining us for episode 5. This is Melanie, and Dom will soon be joining me in a second, as well as our guest, Kevin Chan. I wanted to quickly thank our sponsor, Fuga Veloce, Italian for Fast Escape, who has very generously provided us a 60-minute Fast Escape joyride in a Ferrari 360 around Sydney. To be in the running, I'd ask you to leave a review on iTunes, and one of the most creative or funniest or controversial will win in episode 11. We'll announce the winner. So get in quick, because we're halfway there. This podcast is created to shine a light and share a beer with the wonderful men and women who are responsible for creating the world around us. There is a drinking game involved. Whenever you hear Dom say or I say so, which will unfortunately happen too many times to count, have a drink. Be it a cup of a bit of water, a tea, or a beer, bless ya. Drink up. That's the drinking game for the podcast. Let's get cracking.
Today we have Kevin with us, and Kevin holds a degree in aerospace engineering from University of New South Wales, but he spent most of his time as a mechanical engineer in building services. Now, in addition to that, he also holds an MBA from AGSM. But in around 2010, he got out of engineering and moved into business development. So, welcome, Kev.
Hi, Dom. Hi, Mel. Just a little bit about myself. I'm 35.
Yeah, you're 35.
35, yeah. You sure? Yeah. Just counting through the numbers in my head. You know, some of my hobbies.
Love
automotive, so vehicles, cars, aircraft, aviation.
Which tie in nicely to the aerospace engineering side of things, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. But, yeah, skiing's probably one of the hobbies I enjoy the most.
It's a perfect time of year for it, then.
And also used to ride motorbike as well. And
I did.
All that fun. Yeah, so anything with wheels, basically, by the sounds of it.
Like a lot of engineers, I think. Machinery, mechanical type adventures.
Absolutely. And did you want to go on with where you're working at the moment more detail?
Yeah, so I currently work at Defence Housing Australia. We provide housing and housing-related services to Australia's Defence Force personnel, so our soldiers, our sailors, our airmen, just to give them, help them and their families have a roof over their head during their time of service.
Something that's probably close to your heart, Mel, considering I'd say over your years is with your father being in the Navy, you probably graced a few of those properties.
I know, I was a bit young to pay attention, though. I just know we always had houses, places to live. Although apparently I was born in a demountable.
Oh, right.
Well, not physically a demountable, but my first home was, because I was up in Darwin during Cyclone Tracy, or after Cyclone Tracy, and there was no accommodation for personnel. But anyway, that's another story. So before you joined Defence Housing, you were actually at a company with Dom, and you were an engineer there?
I was.
What was your role there?
So Dom and I both worked together. I worked in mechanical services, so HVAC, air conditioning primarily.
I guess we touched on that with Mike last episode. He was mentioning about HVAC as well.
Yeah, so ventilation, cooling, heating of primarily commercial buildings.
So as an engineer, what was the most challenging role, the challenging thing that you did? Was it drawing? Was it the designing? Was it dealing with people?
Fortunately, we had a great team of drafters to help us out with our drawings.
Okay, that was a bad example. But was it?
To me, I think working at that organisation, we were consultants, so it was actually quite clear that your technical skills had to be adequate. But one of the most challenging things was working with people from all different backgrounds as clients and having to work with them.
Okay.
So non-engineers.
Working with the non-engineers.
Architects, project managers, clients.
Interesting theme coming up as well.
Then. In regards to the
non-technical.
Yeah, it's always a tough part of the industry, I suppose, as well, because when you're dealing with something so technical, and even sort of before this recording started, Kevin and I were sort of talking off mic, and there's obviously a lot of stuff that Mel, you don't understand just purely because it is
technical.
So technical and engineering involved that it becomes very hard that you have to try and impart that knowledge and explain it in simplistic terms without jargon to the clients and to the architects and the other services.
Mm. So it's an important element though.
It is. Communication is the most important thing. Mm. I mean, it's
to ensure everyone's happy on all sides of the fence, let's speak.
So unlike traditional engineering where your design, your specification really carried its own weight due to it being correct from a technical viewpoint. As a consultant, one of the most challenging things I found, definitely early on in my career, was that communication aspect and working with people on from different backgrounds.
Yeah, okay. But what would you find was a satisfying part of working in that industry?
The most satisfying part would probably be walking around and seeing the end product.
Yeah.
Seeing the buildings. It was something very real, very physical, very tangible. Be able to walk past a building that you worked on in the middle of Sydney CBD and point at it and go, I had some element to play in delivering that.
Mm. I was going to point out that we don't actually coach our people. And even though if you've been listening to all our episodes to date, it's a very similar response. I am sensing that that's going to be the...
I think engineers like leaving their mark, really, so... But it is, there is that benefit that we have over a lot of other engineers out there. So, you know, you can leave behind these amazing networks and structures and systems. So one of the guys who I went to school with, he's a telecommunications engineer, and he basically set up all the mobile systems out through the regional areas. And so they're really tangible things that help people, that have such a major impact on people's lives.
So, Kevin, why did you get into engineering in the first place?
That's a really good question.
Thank you. I thought about it really
hard. We were
really
formulating these questions for like five episodes now. So.
So answer the question.
I think I naturally fell into it.
Oh, yeah?
Looking back at school... Yeah, probably a common theme. Looking back at school, the subjects that I enjoyed most and were good at were subjects like mathematics, physics, chemistry, things like that, as opposed to the arts, as opposed to English.
But why aeronautical?
Well, that's just something that you're passionate about, right? Well, as a kid, you look up and you see these...
You want to know how it flies.
You see these amazing objects flying through the sky and you... kind of go, wow, I wonder how that all works. That would be amazing to work on something like that.
So how did you end up in mechanical engineering then? Air conditioning systems are a long way from designing planes.
Yeah, absolutely. So that probably came down to the combination of things. There aren't that many aeronautical or aerospace jobs in Australia at first glance anyway.
Are there any?
Yeah, there would be ones working at Qantas. There would be ones probably working in government departments, maybe defence itself.
Mm. But I imagine there are areas that you're hard to get experience in. You'd have to be established.
Possibly. I mean, they do have, I'm pretty sure Qantas has had grad programs the past. But yeah, they're few and far between as opposed to some other countries. Then I also had... I was fortunate enough to do some work experience over at Cathay Pacific in Hong Kong.
Oh, okay.
Worked in the maintenance team, in Hong Kong. Worked in the maintenance team, maintenance planning. Worked there for three and a bit months as part of my uni degree. And had some really interesting experiences, but ultimately decided that this wasn't going to be what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
So you switched to mechanical at that stage?
At that stage, looked at what else was available in Australia.
Mm.
Construction was going gangbusters, as it, you know, it's a big industry in Australia. And ended up working at this engineering consultancy with Dom, actually, at that point in time.
Oh, is that the only one that you've worked at?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Nice. You were there for a while?
I was there, yeah. It would have been 5 years, 6 years.
Longer than me.
Okay. And while you were there, did you have any funny engineering experiences or anything you could think of that would be amusing for our listeners?
We're not a very funny bunch of engineers. I think no. We're fairly serious kind of people.
Not in the job, anyway.
Well, that's true.
Yes. Off the job. I was going to say, all the funny things probably shouldn't be repeated. They were probably drinks that were... they were things that were alcohol-fueled after working hours.
After letting off all that steam of building the buildings and such.
Yes.
Do you have a highlight while you were there? Something that was interesting or that you can look back on, like a real... project that you were proud of to be a part of?
Let me just have a think about that one.
It could even be, I think Dom's experience, he had a great project that he worked on, but it turned out to be the people that were on the project with him, on the leap thing.
Yeah, well, that was a combination. It was a great project as well. Yeah, it was a
great
project,
but great people. Yeah, it was a combination,
great project and great people. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of that project in my current role. As I understand
yes.
it. It was probably actually working on a job at a Qantas with Carlo, working on a bunch of Qantas's facilities, hangars, and
in a mechanical capacity.
Yeah, yeah. And the current check-in system that they have there with the bag drop.
Oh, did you have to design anything part of that, or was that...
So the design for the actual bag drop and the check-in computers were done by another company. We were looking at how to keep the domestic terminal running whilst they were doing these changes, these renovations, with the airport being live and having very limited hours of shutdown.
Oh, okay.
So that was something that was very rewarding, seeing it all come together. And then... being a customer and flying for the first time and going, yep, again, this is one of those things that we worked on and thank God it all works.
Well, it's sort of tied in with your aerospace engineering anyway. At least you kind of sideswiped.
Yeah. Well, there was something fun about being able to access the apron and working behind the scenes again. You know, that kind of did bring me back to working down in Cathay Pacific as well. Yeah, working around these large machines that... you know, took people all over the world.
They're pretty awesome projects, those sorts of ones. I mean, I can still remember seeing one of the deluge systems that Carlo did for the hangars, where it basically, if there's a fire, it sets off water systems. It's basically like a sprinkler system on steroids, and just watching when they do the test, it's just amazing. The size and scale of those sorts of projects you never get to see normally.
They wouldn't be on normal awesome houses.
No, you definitely wouldn't be having a deluge system like that on a normal house. It'd be blowing you out of the house once the head started going off. But, yeah, great projects to work on.
I think, yeah, it's just something of that type of scale. You know, it's closer to industrial than, say, commercial building.
Yeah.
So seeing something like that come together,
it's a whole different level. Actually, I hadn't realised that was a defining line between commercial and industrial, like that level. So, yeah, that's really cool. And do you have within the engineering community, is there anything in particular that gets you goat? Yeah, bit of a hot topic.
Is there a reason you got out?
Oh, yeah, the reason you got out.
Goat, hot topic. I'll probably touch on it in my mind, and this may not be representative of other people in the industry, but I felt that there was not enough separation between engineering technicians and degree qualified engineers, or hang on, how would you say it? Engineering associates and degree qualified engineers.
So what's the difference between the two?
So, degree qualified engineers are people who've been through university and done a course, and then come out the other end and sort of got into engineering that way, whereas engineering technicians tend to come from more of a trade or TAFE background. So
do they hold different jobs, roles, or...?
At the moment, it depends on it depends on the role, it depends on the job. It's a little bit blurred in that respect. So some of them will be doing the same thing. So some of them will be performing the same task.
Yeah. I think there's a certain value that comes with a degree qualified engineer that isn't necessarily represented in industry. I say that, although I'm aware that the whole CPEng movement is going some way to try and address that type of thing. But, you know, it just seems like the profession engineering does not carry with it the weight that some other professions have. And that may be, you know, the doing of engineers
Is this a building services specific issue?
No, this is a broad stream. This is, it's across all sectors of engineering, really. Building services is only a small sector by comparison to the entire fraternity. So,
I'm just trying to think of the tying of off the, you kind of off the tools and then you're working in these engineering roles versus, how do you get off the tools but work on spacecrafts?
I think the part of the problem is that whilst there are some people that can come off the tools, and it's really going from that whole installation and tangible mechanical sort of side of things to more of the theoretical and design side of things. And there are some people who can cross that divide quite easily, but then there are other people who can't. And conversely, there are a lot of engineers who come out and they're great with the theoretical, but you put them on a building site and they have no idea in regards to what's going on. But
a lot of the criticisms you'll hear that I definitely heard is, it's nice and easy to draw that in a piece of paper. Good luck trying to install it in real life. And that's not... it's true. It's not to downplay the value of one or the other, but I see that there should be differentiation between that.
So when you were saying that good luck, it's good to draw, but good luck putting it in real life. It just cast my mind back to the conversations we've had before about automation and how it's moving in that direction. Is that going to be an issue where the technology designs something and if somebody looks at it and goes, yeah, good luck installing that because it looks good on paper but it's not in reality?
Oh, I don't think so, because that's the same as anything. It's an iterative process. It's eventually, they'll eventually get to a point where the programs will be able to take on board those sorts of factors that are associated with what... the real life conditions are for the installation. So just what we were talking about in a previous episode was that one of the questions we ask is, where do you see the future of engineering going? And one of the things that I've sort of said from a consulting perspective, that with the likes of Revit, where you've got three-dimensional modelling now of buildings and systems, that it's only a matter of time before the computer systems you'll just have to enter some parameters in regards to, I want a building that's X big by X wide that does this, and it'll automatically do it all itself by taking the architectural drawing and sort of jamming it in there and coordinating it and doing everything. So there'll be a move more towards consulting than actual design. So that was what Mel was talking about in relation to that aspect of, will the computer programs be able to pick up the fact that
real life things touch, are designed. The experiment, the knowledge that comes with knowing what those lines mean in real life. So
I guess if it's drawing from the data set that is previous designs or old designs, it'll probably make the same assumptions or mistakes that a professional engineer would on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
You'd end up with a product that's similar to what a professional engineer would design.
Yeah.
I do see that as a topic, though, that could be something to be discussed. There's probably a lot in there. I don't know how much time we have. but AI, I mean, if you can come up with a design guide or a standard for, an engineering process, it sounds very much like you can come up with an algorithm to do the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly.
So I'd probably tend to agree with Dom there at face value anyway. I haven't discussed it any further, but from an engineering point of view, that communication piece is going to really come to the forefront as AI starts to take over some of that design element or design processes as part of delivering the product.
Yeah, I'm just going to circle back now. So the original topic that you were wanting to discuss was the whole engineers university trained versus otherwise, and how they could potentially be working on the same roles, and how, and you already mentioned the solution which is being put into place now, which is that
CPN.
Certified Practicing Engineer. So yeah. The Institute of Engineers has a course
professional development.
Yeah, so a chartered status where if you are a degree qualified engineer, then you can sort of take it further and become placed on the National Engineers Register, become a certified practicing engineer.
Which means you can sign off.
Yes, yeah, so and that's
then,
what they...
Yeah, it then links back into what Mike was saying in a last episode about certain people can sign off on drawings and...
Correct, things, yeah.
Okay, so it's kind of dividing and structuring, perhaps, the engineering community.
Yeah, it is, and I think it's just pushing it forward in a lot of respects too. So there are pathways in relation to ways that you can get there, whether it's, degree qualified or through other avenues. The biggest problem is the fact that they just need to get it there, I think, and they need to...
Who's they?
Well, the Institute of Engineers and the industry as a whole, I suppose, because it's just going to be for the betterment of the all engineers, the profession as a whole. We've talked about this before, where it's akin to law or accounting or something where you do your professional year and you become a certified practicing accountant, or you pass the law boards and so that you're a... board qualified solicitor. Architects require architectural registration as well, where it seems to have been something that kind of slipped through the cracks in relation to engineering for quite a long time. So they seem to be addressing that it's coming. It's still not there, but at least it seems to be gaining a little bit more momentum than it has previously.
Yeah, I mean, when I finished up working with you, Dom, probably late 2000s, that was starting to progress. People were starting to look at it. People were starting to focus and ask for it. But we're talking about the profession being years behind any of the other professions. I mean, CA, CPA type qualifications have been around for a long time now, and it's something that's definitely valued by the accounting profession.
Yeah.
And back then, CPEng was not something that was really valued by the engineering profession. I'm not sure what it's like now, but when I left, I guess, the industry from that point of view, it was, couldn't even tell whether it was starting to get legs yet.
Yeah, well, no one needed it. I think that's been the biggest problem the whole way along. There are certain states where it's a requirement if you need to sign off on things, but in a large proportion of the cases, no one needs, in New South Wales, you didn't need to have it. As long as you held the correct insurances and you could show that you had some previous experience in regards to working in that discipline, for example, then the certifiers were happy to sign off on it. Civil is probably one of the areas where there's always been a requirement because the councils have required it, but it's still for Vermeculec, hydraulics, fire, there's never really been the same sort of level of need for it, but... fire services, it's come about, so it's something that is required to sign off on fire services documentation, and I'm sure in the same vein that mechanical and electrical will be following suit relatively soon. But it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, do we want to cast our mind into the future? What do you think of engineering will be like in the future? And we can jump 10 years.
20
years.
Yeah, well, we briefly touched upon it with AI.
Be around there.
Ultimately, I think we already started to see likes of Revit and 3D modelling and things like that really starting to make its I guess, make its merits or its uses throughout the industry. So you can see that element coming through in 10 years' time.
It'll be
like Dom said, you may not need that manual calculation type aspect of engineering being done. The engineer may just need to sense check what the computer's spitting out, make sure that the inputs and the boundaries on the inputs are correct, and generally just review the outputs.
So have the reality check component on what's being designed.
Yeah, I don't think that's too far away. Definitely, I wouldn't say it for all types of engineering. There's definitely still some engineering that needs an element of creativity or yeah, novel insight.
Yeah, things that don't fit inside a standard, template. A standard Australian standard, or your basic set of requirements.
Yeah.
I think there's always going to be a need for that, but there's always going to be a need for someone to explain to the client what's going on and why things are being done the way they're being done as well, so that they can sort of make sure it fits within their criteria, I think, too.
So that's that consulting side, communicating with the client, explaining what this is.
No wonder you and Dom are such good friends. Word for word, almost. So what would you say to a person who is just starting out engineering, either just starting uni or just coming out or just thinking about it in high school? What would you say?
No, I think it provides a really solid, rigorous base for problem solving. The applications for engineering or the skill set that you learn in engineering definitely isn't limited just to professional engineering. We've mentioned it before. I finished up in that consulting business back in the late 2000s. I actually then went on to work and to be self-employed, working a family business, looking at building a business, and that thought process has served me well even since leaving engineering. In my current role as well. There's definitely many tasks that I approach using an engineering mindset, defining the problem, scoping out what the boundaries are, what we want to do, and coming up with a methodical way of completing the problem or solving the problem.
So once an engineer, always an engineer.
Yeah, and it's a skill set that's I've seen it in demand from other industries. So engineers ending up in finance, ending up in banking, project management. I'm in business development. There's definitely different options that you can take with an engineering education that are outside of engineering.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, and I left that gap there just in case I am wrong, and then you can edit me out. But the MBA course was actually designed around the fact that there were engineers that were coming up and through businesses and who were sort of moving into roles where they were running major corporations, and they needed the assistance just to give them that business sort of perspective. But it just sort of shows that engineers, that critical thinking and that process of thought, was sort of seeing them into some fairly powerful positions in companies.
Yeah, that's my understanding about that degree as well. I wasn't aware of that when I decided to do my MBA, but I realised I didn't have the skill set or the knowledge in other parts of the business world that I needed. The engineering mindset gives you a solid basis for most things that are quantitative in nature. You apply yourself and you'll have no issues with anything to do with, say, accounting or corporate finance or economics. It definitely serves you well. And yes, you can definitely upskill using other formal courses to help assist if you choose not to continue along the engineering path.
So what would you have done differently in your career? Would you have gone into engineering?
Absolutely. I think the the degree, engineering, I guess, the engineering education has served me well.
Mm, given you a good foundation.
Yeah.
But is there anything that you would have done differently, though? Gotten out earlier?
Possibly gotten out earlier. Okay. There's a bit of a giggle around here. Yeah, possibly gotten out earlier. Though, you know, you can't say that without looking at what happened around that time that I did get out. I mean, there was the global financial crisis and times went from being really good before that in the engineering world to a shortage of work, definitely in for a little while in building services until stimulus packages like the Building the Education Revolution package started coming through. So
yes, there were a lot of very quiet engineering firms for a while there. I think they were very happy once that came through. Some people a lot to do very quickly.
Oh. And is there an engineer that you admire?
This is a tough one. Dom's pointing to himself. engineer that I admire, look at the things that we take for granted day in, day out, and the things that we use all the time. I mean, Henry Ford is an engineer that although he may not have invented the automobile or the assembly line, you know, he kind of brought it together under his business and changed the car from something of a luxury to a tool that a lot of people could afford, the masses could afford.
Mm.
If you think this day and age, that's really shaped the way our cities have grown and the way that we lead our day-to-day lives.
Yeah. So, and that's engineers. Like you take various things, elements, you know, you put them together and create something better.
And have a...
solve a problem.
And potentially have a really big impact on the future.
Exactly. And that's half the reason we're doing this is that, you know, engineers are making the future and improving the future. And it's unless you're a Ford or a Tesla or a Westinghouse or, you know, you don't get known. You know. Anyway, I wanted to thank you for your time today, Kevin. And I wanted to thank everyone who is listening for tuning in for another great podcast of Beer with an Engineer. Hopefully you're not too tipsy from all the ums and the so's. I know there are a few in there. I think we're getting better, though. I think we're getting better. You can find further information and show notes on our website, beerwithanengineer.com.au. Follow us on LinkedIn. We've got a company page as well as Dom and I have our own pages that you can look us up. We're on Instagram, beerwithanengineer.podcast, and we're also on Facebook, which is just Beer with an Engineer. Feel free to leave reviews or join in the conversations on our social media pages. I'd love to hear from you. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, please subscribe to our iTunes channel. Make sure you leave a review, pass it along to people. The winner will be announced in episode 11 for that great Ferrari 360 joyride brought to you by Fuga Veloce, our sponsor, Italian for fast escape. Thanks again for listening. We look forward to you joining us next week when we bring you another interview with one of our engineering champions.